Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to HealthyLife.net's Visionary Celebrity Series, a place where you get to call in and talk live to a world-renowned expert. Today's show is Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel, a world-renowned expert on mind-body medicine and patient empowerment. So let's welcome Dr. Bernie Siegel.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to our show. Today's guest is Tom Van Dek. Tom has written a book. We'll get into it. Let him tell you about it. But related to meditation, called The Oceanic Mind. And lately, I've been getting into that more and more. I find the more troubles I have, the more I want to meditate. Tom, you might as well let people know who you are, where you're coming from, and then we can interact and keep going.
Okay, my name's Tom Van Dek, and I'm a workplace meditation trainer and speaker and author. And I tend to specialize in making meditation easier and making it a more customized process, too, because there's no one technique that everyone is compatible with. It's just like there's no one woman that every man needs to marry.
Right. You know, the more I read about it, the more I agree with you. You know, that one, author will be criticizing, I don't mean directly, but will be saying, you know, this technique you don't have to do, you can do this. And I think customizing it is a very significant factor. How would you define meditation for those who are listening and don't get frightened by the word?
Oh, yeah, there's a million different ways to approach it. One thing I tend to repeat over and over again is that meditation is the art of falling in love.
Hmm.
And there's usually two elements to it. There's the concentration element, and then there's the mindfulness element. So with the concentration element, you have an object of focus, and you're becoming more and more intimately connected with this object of focus, more absorbed in it. And that's the concentration element. And then the mindfulness element is when thoughts come up, you want to be present with those thoughts and take note of the fact that you're thinking and just allow those thoughts and emotions and other stuff just to be. And then you just gently bring your attention back to the object of focus. And that develops equanimity.
Now, I mean, do you consider that a mantra, or are there many ways of having an object of focus? What do you see?
Yeah, mantra is one of them. I mean, some people are visual, some people are verbal, some people are kinesthetic. And I noticed in one of your books you have meditations that incorporate all three of those elements within the
meditation. Yeah, I try to, because I learned. I happen to be an artist and very visual.
Yeah.
But I noticed, for instance, my wife, you know, could smell the flowers during a meditation that I might be seeing. And, you know, and others are in touch. So I try to incorporate all the words, the see, feel, hear, the smell, all our factors in. That's an interesting thought. I hadn't, you know, thought of myself in my own techniques.
Mm. Yeah. An object of focus can be anything. It can be a visual scene, something you're imagining. It can be a word, or it can be a line from your favorite song at church.
Right.
It can be a whole lot of things.
Yeah, I tend to use a lot of songs, the old country western that I've been listening to on satellite, because it's very poetic and very much about life.
Yeah.
So some of those lines are very useful. The other is, you know, the problem we all have when we start thinking. Something I've noticed, if I refuse to let my mind use words, then I can't worry. And I don't know where that came from in my own, you might say, practice in a sense, but I realized if I just said, no, you can't, you know, use words, then I can't make up things to worry about. And what does that second phase mean to you in a sense of what you try to help people with? When things come up that they do worry about, how do we handle that?
It's a matter of just taking note of what's going on. Letting go of goals helps. If you let go of expectations in your meditation, that helps. And then when that stuff is coming up, you don't have to worry about being in a particular state of mind. It's just that act of being aware of what's coming up is going to take you a long way in your meditation.
Well, let's say something comes up and I'm worrying. How do you help me stop? I mean, you say don't set goals. Yeah, I mean, my goal may be what I'm worried about. Will it happen? Will it not happen? But how do you get people into that mindfulness state where they can clear out that stuff?
One thing I tend to do a lot is warm-ups. So in hatha yoga classes, it doesn't always incorporate a meditation element, but the hatha yoga is a good way to warm up for meditation. You're doing physical exercises, mm-hmm. and you're stretching the spine, limbering the joints, and doing some breathing exercises, and that can help set the stage so that you can deal with this stuff when it comes up. You can deal with it more effectively when you're actually going into meditation.
Yeah, I hadn't noticed. I mean, what I've noticed, because I'm not necessarily in a yoga class, I've been in some, but when I'm doing what I call repetitive exercise, you know, running, biking, walking, I tend to get more into this meditative state. It's as if my mind doesn't have a body to worry about because it's doing something repetitive, and then it goes off into another place.
A repetition is one of the major elements of meditation. Mantra meditators, they repeat the same phrase over and over again, or the same word over and over again. And it does have that hypnotic effect, but it also, it's easier to become absorbed in a repetitive phrase or breath, which just rises and falls.
Right. And do you think the more you do this routine, the deeper you get?
Yeah, each time it creates a momentum.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you do any kind of meditative act, or even just stretching or singing those Western songs,
right?
it'll create this momentum behind the scenes. So there's so much going on in our consciousness that we're not even aware of. And all these little things are going to add up to big things.
Mm. So, yeah, I mean, one line that just popped into my head from John Denver, because I haven't sung this one in a long time, but it was sweet, sweet surrender, life without care, like the fish in the ocean or the birds in the air.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we could be like them, yeah, you know, we're into a different state. Now, how, I mean, you know, my question in a sense is, why should people do this? What good is it? How does it benefit us to meditate?
Well, meditation is our natural state of mind when we're not resisting. So when we're not resisting experience, there's so much experience that comes up that we just push out of our consciousness. Our breathing might get restricted because we don't want to feel something.
Mm-hmm.
That leads to a lot of conflicts. With other people, that leads to a lot of conflicts within us. It can lead to all kinds of sicknesses. So with meditation, you're just being present with your experience as it rises into consciousness and falls out of consciousness without clinging to pleasurable experience or pushing away uncomfortable experience.
Mm. You know, I was just thinking back, because I do a lot with mind-body, and realize they are not separate entities, but one. I was thinking back to years ago, the book Beyond Biofeedback and Swami Rama and the incredible things he could do with his body in terms of regulating blood flow, heartbeat, all kinds of things. I mean, do you help people use that too? I mean, use the meditation as a way of helping to heal themselves physically?
Oh, yes. I mean, there are all kinds of mind-body training exercises that I teach, and most of them have a profound effect on the physiology. In fact, all of them do. And yeah, the more you do this stuff, the more synapses in the brain you create, and then it creates greater coherence in the brain, which means the different parts of the brain are working together as one unit more coherently, and then as a result, the mind and the body work together more coherently as a unit. And all these activities in meditation, it always has an effect on the physiology.
Yeah, I as a surgeon, worked with people under anesthesia, obviously, and I was amazed at how their bodies responded to directions I gave them while they were anesthetized. And I think that, in a sense, if we can get into that meditative state, we can also communicate with our body in the same way. You know, because then the intellect isn't interfering and getting in the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard of, more recently, I've heard of Reiki practitioners and other healers going into the operating room.
Oh, yeah.
And working with patients.
Yeah, the, medicine is beginning to wake up, you know, as we shift our beliefs and start studying things. And I always say nobody's against success, but too often I would hear doctors say, I can't accept that, you know, because it's never been a part of their training. And so it's not scientific. And but if we just open our minds and see the experience, because I really feel, having met some recently, some energy healers who in experiments with mice will cure cancer in a mouse, just with their energy, that this is where medicine needs to go in the next decade, to study the effects of energy and our own potential, what's within us, or what we could be conduits for, or whatever you want to call it, and show what we're capable of.
Mm. It seems like medicine's been coming a long way since you first got into medicine. So have you noticed a lot of changes in the past 10 years or so?
Well, yeah. I mean, I always say they're 10 or 20 years behind where I wish they were, but I see how much more acceptance there is, and then a willingness to study things, you know, and to experiment and say, okay, this does make a difference, whether it's playing music in an operating room or Reiki, you know, in the hospital, where they allow practitioners to come in and see that it makes a difference in the patients. And 20 or 30 years ago, wouldn't even let them in the door. I mean, if I didn't have a degree and weren't a capable surgeon, I think they would have told me to leave. But, you know, I had the freedom to do things. And then when they saw that they worked, it became hospital policy. And, I never got credit for anything, but it was hospital policy because it helped the patients. And I think that's the key, to just for people to open their minds. The way I put it is, if I experience something and it's a benefit, then I accept it. And even if I can't explain it or understand why it worked, I say, okay, I can accept it. And then maybe 10 years later, somebody says, oh, look, I can explain why that works now. Mm-hmm. And that people should just keep their minds open and explore and not be afraid. Because that's the other thing. I mean, do you run into this in the sense of the failure issue? Because what I saw years ago, when I literally sent a letter to cancer patients saying, let me help you live a longer, better life, expecting hundreds of people to show up because we sent 100 letters out, and less than a dozen women appeared, that what I realized, people are so afraid of failing, of doing it wrong. Do you get into this with, I'm not coming to learn how to meditate because I'm not good at it or I might not do it right?
Well, I hear that a lot, and I just heard something like that last week. He was someone who wanted to learn meditation in order to help him recover from alcohol, but then a couple days later, he was saying that he has ADD and he can't focus on anything. And I was trying to explain to him that it doesn't matter. You're not an instant. You can't be a perfectionist with meditation. You're not an instant master.
Right.
Of meditation, it's a training of the mind, and it's kind of like the river that carves the Grand Canyon.
Hmm. I like that.
Yeah.
You keep at it,
right?
Yeah, but I think so much of it, I say, is how people are brought up, and when they're hypnotized into you're a failure, you never amount to anything, you can't get anything right. They're afraid to even try to help themselves to do that. All right. And my next question would be, how did you get into this? Who was your teacher and leader?
Well, I got into it in the late 80s sometime. And I was probably about 11 years old. And someone was talking about biofeedback. And I asked him what biofeedback was, and then what he did is he explained to me how to do a self-hypnosis technique, which some people call it progressive relaxation. And I started practicing it, and right then I was hooked, and then I just kept studying healing arts and all the mind-body literature out there, and as well as meditation practices and yoga. And then I just kept going with it. And even in high school, I had a Latin teacher. He was a former Catholic priest, and he was, every Friday we did a body scan meditation. The meditation is just something that I just kept running into again and again. It's something that I just can't escape. And I never stopped practicing. And it's brought me to a very good place.
Mm. Yeah, my sense is if people would take the time for it, rather than be so busy, I don't have time to meditate. I mean, I often use our dogs for an excuse. You know, if I take them for a walk, I can be by myself and do this. Whereas when you're in the house and all kinds of things are going on. And I also often suggest to people that they build what I call create a space in your home, like a little shrine, that if you go there for the meditation, for the quiet time, just walking into it helps deepen you, you know, when you do it over and over again. It's like that space. And I feel this in many religious institutions. It's almost like the consciousness of what has gone on there, you can feel in the room. And not just religion, but into homes, hospitals, and other places. That it affects the consciousness of your surroundings. And so some places feel, you know, very healing, and others you just feel conflict.
When you build a shrine, yeah, it does, you're energizing it every time you meditate with it. You're creating a deeper connection with it. And it's also the Pavlov's dogs effect, too,
mm-hmm.
where when you create a habit and your mind associates that particular space with meditation, it'll create those inner conditions.
Yeah.
It'll trigger those inner conditions that make meditation easier.
You know, what popped into my head was something Thich Nhat Hanh wrote about that helped me. He talked about bells of mindfulness. He said in his Buddhist country, you hear temple bells throughout the day, so it stops you. And you, you know, breathe deeply and take time to meditate. And he said, you know, you come to the United States, there's nothing. You don't hear any, you know, bells during the day. But he said you can create your bell. And what helped me was his saying things like, you could pull up to a red light and say, I will meditate, you know, breathe peace, or the phone rings. And that's the one I love, that when the phone rings, I let it ring several times and breathe peace for myself and the caller. And I notice a difference in my voice when I pick up the phone. I'm in a different place. I'm not so likely to be aggravated by somebody who's calling me to sell, you know, aluminum siding or make a donation or something else while you're trying to eat dinner. But I didn't know if you had any, like, little techniques or clues of that sort to help people interrupt their day and fit it in.
The Thich Nhat Hanh was very good at that, like the art of integrating meditation into daily life.
Right.
And, yeah, there's a thing that I like to call elevator time, where you have 30 seconds in an elevator to do something that's calming, balancing, and personally meaningful for you, something that speaks to the soul.
All right.
That creates a powerful momentum. When you can slip in 1 minute out of each hour, for consciousness-raising activities or just self-observation, it'll make meditation so much easier for you, and you don't have to worry about how much time is in your schedule.
Yeah, I love that symbol. Hold on a minute. We have to take a break, but I'd like to come back to that elevator because I love that symbolism. So we have to take our first break, and then we'll be right back.
Smudge Bunny, a book for children by Dr. Bernie Siegel, is based upon a true story of a bunny named Smudge, whom the Siegels really rescued. This charming tale about Smudge Bunny and her mother can help teach a child how to survive difficulties and turn them into blessings, as well as getting greater self-esteem. Smudge Bunny by Dr. Bernie Siegel, a charming tale, a bunny's tale, just for your child. Get it today at Amazon.com, bookstores, or Bernie's website at ecap-online.org.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? Would you feel scared or proud? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Would you rather make your own way or spend a lifetime saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. I go to peacecorps.gov.
Love Magic and Mud Pies is a brand new book by Bernie Siegel, MD. It helps you raise your kids to feel loved, be kind, and make a difference. Bernie, a husband of over 50 years, father of 5 children, and grandparent of 8, shares the gems of wisdom he has gathered from his practice and his own family life. Using his caring, comforting, down-to-earth style, Bernie's book answers parenting questions and gives you a wealth of quotes, anecdotes, and parenting tips, delivered with just the right dose of compassion, inspiration, and gentle humor. Love Magic and Mud Pies, an insightful, supportive, must-have guide on every aspect of parenting. Love Magic and Mud Pies by Bernie Siegel, MD, is available on Amazon.com and find bookstores everywhere. Order it today. And don't forget to hear Bernie Siegel's show, Mind Health Matters, right here on HealthyLife.net.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Welcome back, everyone. And Tom, as a visual person, I love the symbolism, and I can almost as well feel myself in the elevator riding up and just taking time during that ride to focus on my thoughts and meditation. I love the symbolism, and as well as I could say you're going down, but I keep thinking of rising up in the elevator more than headed downward, but either direction would work. I know. The other thoughts I had, I have both a painting of my parents in my house. You know, we talk about, like, shrines. And I also have an old clock that they had on a little boat they had, And I think every 4 hours it goes bung bung. But those are things also that remind me, as well as a statement from Lao Tzu that was, be content with the way things are, rejoice in No, rejoice in the way things are. Be content with what you have. But when you realize nothing is lacking, the whole world belongs to you. And that sits in front of me at every meal. And so I have, not only that, but through the house, you know, messages to live by, as well as images and sounds that help me come back to myself, the way getting in an elevator could become that kind of symbol. And when people are starting, you know, interested in this, what, I mean, do you have, let's say, a system or techniques or procedures that you say to them, okay, here's what I want you to do so this becomes, you know, a part of your life and you get better at it?
Yeah, there's a whole lot of things. It depends on what you're compatible with. So if you have a favorite scripture, it might be good to bookmark some of your favorite passages and carry it with you for the elevator. And stretching is also very good. It brings you back into the body. It brings you back into the present moment. And if you take time out to stretch once in a while, your ability to relieve stress or go into a meditative state, it greatly increases. And you might have a favorite song from church or a favorite cowboy song, and then slip those in. And you seem to do a lot of planting, like you plant things into your environment that remind you.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's definitely a good...
Now you know so much about me, but I put things out in our yard, even when our pets die. I mean, symbols, but to remind me about life, if you know what I mean. You know, this happened to me, that one of our dogs died, and I was building a shrine for him, and each morning I'd come out and look for a stone to put on it, so each day it got bigger. And one morning I came out, and though it sounds crazy, I heard the dog say to me, "Why don't you bring me a flower?" And wow, what a shift. You know, I went from looking for stones to let me look for something beautiful, a flower. And I think that, you know, those simple things, when you go out of the house, look for a flower. I often say to people, because I've had this and started doing it, I don't know why, that when you get up in the morning, say to yourself, this is my first day on the planet. I'm an extraterrestrial. I just got here last night. Let me look around. And everything, really, you know, from examples, from ice, you look out the window, say, oh, ice, how am I going to drive? And then suddenly you notice the sun on the ice, and it became like a world full of diamonds. And it was, oh, how beautiful. And I think when we shift our thinking in that way, it does. It changes the world. It becomes a different place.
Yeah, it reminds me of that garbage in, garbage out statement in the computer science. Yeah.
Now,
but we have choices of what to fill our thoughts with, and they all have a physiological effect.
Yep.
And a spiritual effect, too.
Another thing that pops into my head. Hope I'm not driving you crazy. But the title of your book, Oceanic Mind, one of the things that struck me was the role of water. Number one, in terms of its ability, you know, gas, liquid, solid. So it can change to meet any circumstance and be destructive as well as productive. But the other was the symbolism of the stillness of a pond, in which the ugly duckling sees that he's a swan, because he isn't resenting his mother, that rotten woman who's thrown him out of the house. He's got a quiet mind and a quiet life. And the other was a story I read through Joseph Campbell that a tiger dies giving birth, chasing goats, so the goats raise the tiger. And another tiger comes along and says, hey, dumbbell, you're not a goat, come here. And he takes him again to the still pond, and then he sees he's a tiger. And that Campbell talked about it like yoga meditation. And I think that, to me, I don't know if your use of the word oceanic fits into that, but how hard it is for us to create that stillness so we can literally see who we are and accomplish that state and the healing that goes with it.
Yeah, it's a matter of plucking away at it and slipping things in through the day. It definitely helps. And taking care of the body and incorporating stretching and limbering the spine, limbering the joints, all those things, and using your elevator time wisely can make it a whole lot easier.
Mm. I mean, because in reading other people's, writings on meditation, they talk as you do about the stretching and relaxing. I mean, do you find certain positions are important, or is it just a matter of making yourself comfortable?
Yeah, I mean, it can vary from person to person, but definitely you want to be aware of your spine, and that can take a couple yoga poses or bending over and touching your toes, shaking out the joints, things like that. That helps to make meditation easier. But maybe there's not one thing that's good for everyone. Some people are more tense than others in different places.
All right.
But that physical element definitely helps. And if you do warm-ups before meditation, starting with the physical body, is a good way to pave the way for going deeper.
To tune yourself up. All right. Well, we've got to... the time goes too fast. We've got to take another break. But when we come back, we can discuss some more about oceanic and other things. And timing, too. How quickly, how you fit a meditation in different circumstances. All right. So we'll be back again in a couple of minutes.
Dr. Bernie Siegel has done it again, and I can't wait to share his new book, Buddy's Candle, with my grandchild. If you have a kid in your life, this book is a heartwarming story of how to live life fully and accept loss and death with an open heart, filled with charming illustrations, humor, and heartfelt exuberance. Buddy's Candle is a joy-filled adventure. Get it today. Call 888-232-4444. That's 888-232-4444. What does HealthyLife.net and Amazon.com have in common? Well, they're both available on the Internet. They both give great value. But most important, most of our positive program hosts and guests are accomplished authors, and their books are available from, you got it, Amazon.com. Now, it even gets better than that, because when you're listening on air to a HealthyLife.net host or guest, you can go directly to Amazon.com, and you can order your book while you're still listening to your favorite HealthyLife.net program. So when you hear an author you like, go to the homepage of HealthyLife.net and click on Amazon.com. What can you learn from exceptional patients? Plenty. No matter what disease you are dealing with, Dr. Bernie Siegel's book, Peace, Love, and Healing, can help you identify the hidden factors that may be stopping you from getting well. What are the hidden factors? Are you ready? Guilt and blame. Find out how guilt and blame is related to your lifestyle and illness. In Peace, Love, and Healing, Bernie, as he likes to be called, will tell you what steps you can take to heal a life and cure a disease. Peace, Love, and Healing. Get it today at fine bookstores or at Bernie's website, ecap-online.org. It's a fact. With Clarins, life is more beautiful, and so are you. If you love beauty, and let's face it, love is behind everything we do, then you'll love Clarins Beauty Products. I use Clarins, and people ask me all the time how I stay looking so young. I tell them it's love. But now you know my real secret. It's Clarins. They have a full line of highly effective beauty products containing the highest quality ingredients while respecting the environment. Who wouldn't love that? Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Clarins and make your life more beautiful, starting with you.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Hi, welcome back, everyone. But, Tom, I don't mean to, pursue you, but did the oceanic have some specific meaning to you in terms of that, term?
Yes, that's a symbol. It's used a lot in the Hindu world. Mm-hmm. And other places too. And so you have the waves of the ocean, and that symbolizes our experience. Experience arises within us, and then it falls away again.
Mm.
And the more present we are with our experience as it arises within us, the more we expand and we become more like the ocean. Below the waves of the ocean, it's very still. It's infinitely expansive, at least for our metaphorical purposes. And no storm can disturb it. The storms can only disturb the surface of the ocean. So the more we go into meditation, the more we become like the ocean. And it's infinite stillness. It's that we're touching that point of infinite stillness behind the emotions, behind the thoughts, and behind the body sensations. Because those are all on the surface.
Yeah. And, you know, that's why I keep saying to people, if you can become water, you know, you can get through anything. But the other is my sense of humor, that also when the wave hits the beach, you don't hear it complain. You know, it accepts that too. Or a stream running into rocks, we still sit and listen and say, listen to those peaceful sounds. And I think the more we can become like water, the more our difficulties will be handled the way water handles them. And not in anger and outrage and conflict, but to accept a lot of things in a peaceful way.
Oh, yeah.
Do you see any conflict with religion in any of these things that you do? Because I've run into some Catholics who won't do guided imagery because Satan could take over your images. And I didn't know if you ran into any of those things with people also.
Sometimes that happens. There is a lot of fear within some fundamentalist circles and there's a big rivalry between evangelical circles and the Christian mystics, and that's been going on forever.
Mm.
But, I mean, meditation is just your natural state of mind. And when you go into a state of deep, sincere prayer, you know, you're praying to Jesus, and you're just relaxing into your prayer. And
yeah, that's right.
It helps to bring a state of deep inner stillness within. That's meditation.
Right.
The more absorbed you are, the more it resembles meditation.
Right. Another question. Breathing. How does the breathing work into this and help it? Because I also notice when I focus on my breathing, it's hard to worry about anything else because I'm just feeling that breath and paying attention to it coming in and out.
The breath and the awareness are very related. And when we enter uncomfortable situations, the first reaction is often restricted breath. And that's the ego's way of shutting down feelings so we don't have to feel something.
Mm.
And so if we can breathe deeply and use more of our lung capacity, it allows us to be present with our experience as it comes up and to work with the reality of the moment better.
Yeah, I keep sitting here nodding and agreeing with you and enjoying all you have to say. All right. Now, one other aspect that I find fascinating on a personal level is, you know, the aspect of consciousness. My personal feeling, just to share, is that consciousness, number one, is non-local. You know, that we can communicate at a distance through consciousness, but also that when our bodies end, our consciousness doesn't. And so when people are meditating, you know, like my saying, I heard my dog say, bring me a flower. I many times have heard voices which have given me wonderful direction in terms of doing things with my life or asking or whatever. How does this fit into your thoughts and your beliefs, the role of consciousness? and even God. I mean, how do you, you know, communicating, you might say, at different levels with this greater consciousness?
Yeah, sometimes we receive information symbolically when it's information that it's that's hard to experience directly. Through our intuition, out of that inner stillness comes symbolism that symbolizes something very real. So if you're witnessing a spontaneous healing, you might have mental imagery of plumbers going through the intestines or through the arteries, and that's a symbol of something that's actually going on.
Mm.
So our brain tends to communicate to us through symbols.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that, I mean, very honestly, I have often said, I think the reason we sleep is for this communication. In other words, there are a lot of ways we could rest, but that when we sleep, then this consciousness can, and our bodies can speak to us through symbols, just as you say. They don't use words. I mean, there may be words in the dream, but it's still the symbol that becomes so important to us.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much that we don't experience directly. Amachi, she once said, God is pure experience.
Mm.
And so, yeah, seeking that reality, we're seeking to become more fully alive, which means we're experiencing more.
Yeah, the word I love is potential. You
yeah.
know, what we are capable of. And to not be afraid to, you know, reach out for it. And to give people different tools. What about what I call life as a labor pain? I mean, when we come back after the break, how do you help people use their troubles and use their pain to get to a better place? And that's why I like to call it a labor pain, that if you're birthing yourself and creating a new life, doesn't hurt as much. So after the break, we'll be back and share that.
Bernie Siegel has done it again, and I can't wait to share his new book, Buddy's Candle, with my grandchild. If you have a kid in your life, this book is a heartwarming story of how to live life fully and accept loss and death with an open heart, filled with charming illustrations, humor, and heartfelt exuberance. Buddy's Candle is a joy-filled adventure. Get it today. Call 888-232-4444. That's 888-232-4444.
Love Magic and Mud Pies is a brand new book by Bernie Siegel, M.D. It helps you raise your kids to feel loved, be kind, and make a difference. Bernie, a husband of over 50 years, father of 5 children, and grandparent of 8, shares the gems of wisdom he has gathered from his practice and his own family life. Using his caring, comforting, down-to-earth style, Bernie's book answers parenting questions and gives you a wealth of quotes, anecdotes, and parenting tips. Delivered with just the right dose of compassion, inspiration, and gentle humor. Love Magic and Mud Pies, an insightful, supportive, must-have guide on every aspect of parenting. Love Magic and Mud Pies by Bernie Siegel, M.D. is available on Amazon.com and find bookstores everywhere. Order it today. And don't forget to hear Bernie Siegel's show, Mind Health Matters, right here on HealthyLife.net.
Smudge Bunny, a book for children by Dr. Bernie Siegel, is based upon a true story of a bunny named Smudge, whom the Siegels really rescued. This charming tale about Smudge Bunny and her mother can help teach a child how to survive difficulties and turn them into blessings, as well as getting greater self-esteem. Smudge Bunny by Dr. Bernie Siegel, a charming tale, a bunny's tale, just for your child. Get it today at Amazon.com, bookstores, or Bernie's website at ecap-online.org.
Last month, I had to buy gifts for two high school graduates, a college graduate, two couples getting married, my girlfriend's birthday, my niece who was celebrating the all-important Sweet 16. I was planning a whole day at the mall until I found Fossil Watches, right here on HealthyLife.net. Well, not only did I find an amazing selection of watches for men and women, but purses, eyewear, and jewelry, and just tons of cool stuff. So I did all my gift shopping in one shot at Fossil Watches by clicking through from HealthyLife.net. It doesn't get any simpler than that.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Welcome back, everyone. I have so many thoughts. I can't even remember what I said at the beginning of the break. But I think two things, Tom. You're working with a senior. That's the problem. One was, how do we use our pain? Hemingway said it, to become stronger at the broken places, you know. How do we use it as a labor pain to progress? And the other test question I'd give you is, if you had to say to somebody, not only how do you use your pain, but how do you then remain free of worry? What things would you share with them to help guide them?
Yeah. Well, when we read Buddhist texts on meditation, sometimes they can be very mechanical, and we see terms like mindfulness and then concentration, things like that. But ultimately, mindfulness is synonymous with love. And I know love is one of your big themes.
Mm.
And love is also consciousness. So when you become intimate with someone, you get to know them better. You're touching each other on finer and finer levels. And that can bring up a lot of stuff. In a relationship or in meditation, the light of consciousness shines on something that needs to be healed, like a dark spot.
Mm.
And it'll be painful. So in order to deal with that, we can't blow our circuits by just, blowing ourselves up with consciousness, but just trying the best we can to feel what needs to be felt so that it can be healed, so that we can become more whole.
Yeah. I mean, my feeling is that, you know, I often will say to people at a workshop, would you like to be free of pain? And I said, if anybody says yes, you know, call me because I can reverse it for you. Because you can't defend and protect yourself or define yourself if you don't have pain. But I think how we use it, that physical pain is a necessity to help us protect and guide ourselves. Suffering is a whole other issue. And I think, again, whether it's suffering or worry, when you're capable of mindfulness and meditation, you can begin to eliminate those things from your life.
Yeah, stuff comes up all the time that needs to be healed. We're always being pushed toward growth, and we can go along with it as it occurs, or we can drag our feet and prolong it a little bit, but that's definitely the norm.
And yeah, because even when you're talking about love, I mean, relationships are a struggle. I mean, Joseph Campbell called marriage an ordeal because he said you're creating a third entity, a relationship. So just what you're saying, that when you are only focused on the self, you're more likely to get into lots of conflict and problems than when you look at other people and the relationship and work at that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and with relationships, everyone's here to teach us something, even if they're playing an antagonistic role.
Right.
And usually there's some tension point within us that the antagonist is poking at. And they're letting us know that there's a weak spot there that needs to be cleared. And the more present we can be with that person when we're interacting with them, and the more present we can be with our breath when we're interacting with them, so we're not shutting out the experience, the more we're dealing with the reality of the moment, and then we can heal that stuff that needs to be healed. Otherwise, someone else is going to come along and play that same antagonist role,
you know,
until we figure it out.
Again, I love reading Joseph Campbell, and something in one of his books, again, the term I love and the title of it that somebody put together is Reflections on the Art of Living. So again, to me, it's like this still pond, the reflections. But he said, he was quoting Nietzsche, who said, love your fate. And then he said, no matter what hell you're going through, ask, why do I need this? And on a personal level, I found that very helpful. You know, again, like the labor pain, that when I am reacting to something that's going on in my life or family, and especially as the doctor, you know, who can't cure everything, and I'm getting angry, and but when I stop and say, love your fate, why do you need this? It really teaches me about being compassionate, you know, not just prescribing, but being compassionate, and what it can teach you about yourself and how it can change you. And I think that the meditation of what you're saying is accomplishing the same thing, to teach you more about yourself.
It helps us to, yeah, it trains us so that we can do that. So it's a gradual training of the mind. Mm. You might have breakthroughs and quantum leaps and meditation sometimes, but overall it's just, it's like I said before, the river that's carving the Grand Canyon. And it's going to help you in all those situations so that you can be present with the experience.
Yeah, and I think, as you say, it's a gradual progression, because what I learned to do was reread certain books every few years. Because if the book didn't get better, it meant I hadn't changed. But if I have, through my practice, grown and changed, and suddenly certain words would now leap off the page at me, see, as being very insightful. And I felt it's just a way for me to test myself. And another is how I get along with people and the world. That if the world seems nicer, in other words, the people I meet every day seem nicer, I realize I'm getting better. I'm nicer, and I'm not projecting onto them all my crap and problems. You know, I say this, it's like when you need the plumber or the electrician, something, you know, or your furnace doesn't work, and you're aggravated in how you treat the repair people who come. But I find now that I enjoy them more and get into, you know, talking to them and slowing them down. But I feel better because, again, it's one person working with another person, you know, rather than being aggravated and into the professional, intellectual aspect, but getting into the feeling, emotional part. And
yeah,
you know what, because this is our last segment, if people want to get in touch with you, I don't know, you know, never even thought, because the emails, where you live and if you have a website and things like that.
Okay, yeah. I live in Prescott, Arizona.
All right.
The book is Oceanic Mind, the Deeper Meditation Training Course, and then there's also an audio course, which is a little more secular, a little more sterilized, and that's the Deeper Meditation audio course, and the website is deepermeditation.net.
Okay.
And there's also a blog that's part of that site with a lot of guest authors. It's the Ultimate Stress Blog. That's brand new.
Okay. So deepermeditation.net. Net. Okay. I wanted to be sure. All right. Well, thank you. It's always nice to have somebody on that I agree with.
It's great to be on with a host who's been doing this stuff forever, too.
The way I put it is I try to live the sermon. So if I'm going to, you know, suggest things to people or try to teach something, I should be living it and keep working at it. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Bernie.
All right, and this is archived, too, so if anybody wants to check in or send you a message, they will do that. But bless you, Tom, and thanks for being here.
Yes, thank you.
Dr. Bernie Siegel has done it again, and I can't wait to share his new book, Buddy's Candle, with my grandchild. If you have a kid in your life, this book is a heartwarming story of how to live life fully and accept loss and death with an open heart, filled with charming illustrations, humor, and heartfelt exuberance. Buddy's Candle is a joy-filled adventure. Get it today. Call 888-232-4444. That's 888-232-4444. What does HealthyLife.net and Amazon.com have in common? Well, they're both available on the Internet. They both give great value. But most important, most of our positive program hosts and guests are accomplished authors. And their books are available from, you got it, Amazon.com. Now, it even gets better than that. Because when you're listening on air to a HealthyLife.net host or guest, you can go directly to Amazon.com and you can order your book while you're still listening to your favorite HealthyLife.net program. So when you hear an author you like, go to the homepage of HealthyLife.net and click on Amazon.com. What can you learn from exceptional patients? Plenty. No matter what disease you're dealing with, Dr. Bernie Siegel's book, Peace, Love, and Healing, can help you identify the hidden factors that may be stopping you from getting well. What are the hidden factors? Are you ready? Guilt and blame. Find out how guilt and blame is related to your lifestyle and illness. In Peace, Love, and Healing, Bernie, as he likes to be called, will tell you what steps you can take to heal a life and cure a disease. Peace, Love, and Healing. Get it today at fine bookstores or at Bernie's website, ecap-online.org.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
For listening, and remember, we're on the first Tuesday of every month from noon to 1 Eastern Standard Time, and frankly, I'd love to have call-ins and chat with you, and the call-in number is 1-800-555-5453. Yes, we do have a different guest every month, but we're happy to chat with you, and if you want to communicate with me or want me to bring up any specific subjects, you can get in touch with me over my website, Bernie Siegel, SIEGELMD.com. And thank you for listening and sharing. And peace be with you.